Let me bang you.
I do let you bang.
Let me bang you, man.
I let you bang.
Greetings, marriage and virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, forget Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
What's up, people? Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me and the funniest person on the planet here, Sean McCorkle. We're both zooming our backgrounds. I like that. How are you, Sean?
Hanging in there, man. It's I had something funny I want to tell you, but I don't know if you want to start with something else. But
No, whatever you want to start with. Let's go.
All right. Yeah, well, I guess we're waiting. This morning, man, when I wake up, it's weird getting older because you're my age, so you probably, if you haven't felt some of these effects, I'm sure you will. My years may have come on earlier because the years of steroid abuse I was using may have, pushed mine off a little bit. The HGH may have, delayed it. But when I wake up in the morning, my vision's blurry. I used to have 20/20 vision. I've never had glasses, never had contacts. But like for the first 10 minutes of the day, I try to look at my phone or whatever, and I feel like Brendan Schaub does all day. Like I can't read, you know what I mean? I'll be looking and I can't, like, everything's blurry. I can't see. So I've just been like, I'm addicted to YouTube and podcasts like all day long. When I'm buying $10,000 dogs or doing whatever it is I do, I've got like a podcast going of some kind. In the morning I just hit YouTube and I open up the first suggested video. And, this morning I couldn't see even who it was or what it was, but apparently it was a rapper or two rappers talking about, like Eminem and why you don't mess with Eminem, you know, like they were just talking about how, like, you know, no one will go at him because, he'll roast or whatever. And it was like, he was like, you know what I'm saying, man, ain't nobody going to touch Eminem, you know, because he'd be straight roasting your ass, homie, you know, this and that. And it's weird because the guy was from India. So I thought that was strange that he was talking like that. But I stole that joke from somebody. I don't know who, but he was talking about it, and I really got thinking about this morning as I was trying to wake up and get my vision cleared, and regretting many life decisions I had made and wishing I was young again and things like that. I was thinking, I was like, do you realize those guys are afraid to insult Eminem? Not because, and these are supposedly hardened street criminals, you know, or whatever. They're not afraid he's going to shoot them, beat them up, nothing like that. Like you're going to mess with Don Fry's hat at a UFC or something, you know, like it's they're worried that he is going to say bad things about them in a poetic manner.
Yeah.
Like that's what they're worried. And they're like, dude, I'm telling you, don't mess with him. He'll trash your ass and rhyme at the same time. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, and I just thought that was funny because I was thinking about like how rappers are kind of the modern day poets. Like, I wonder if back in the day, like Robert Frost, like had people that he had a beef with, and they were like, dude, I'm telling you, don't mess with Robert Frost. He'll have you stopping by woods on a snowy evening, you know, like, or just something like whatever, like Walt Whitman or people like that. Like he's gonna have the homies calling you old captain, you know, like, or whatever. Like, I wonder if they really did like worry that. I've been thinking about that all day long. Like, as I was out cutting my grass earlier and doing some stuff with my dogs and stuff, I couldn't quit thinking like how the part they're afraid of is the rhyming, not necessarily what he'll say, but the fact that, and let's be honest, the words don't always rhyme either. Like they don't.
That's a really funny bit. I mean, you have to shorten it, but the Robert Frost thing's hilarious. The fucking Mark Twain's hilarious. And then I would say I think it's more like anything else, man. It's not getting your ass kicked. It's having someone record it. Like getting your ass kicked isn't even the scary part anymore. It's
no.
It's not getting knocked out and having it be on World Star.
Right.
Like having
that's what Michael Jordan said at Kobe Bryant's funeral. I was hoping he would bring up the fact that he was an accused rapist, but instead he was bringing up the if you ever read the police report, by the way, Kobe was guilty, but that's a whole nother story. Like if you read the police report, but I'm sure most innocent men apologize on national TV and pay the victim $10 million. But but Michael Jordan started crying at his funeral and he goes, now I'm going to put up another 10 years of memes of me being the crying face guy. He said that he's more known for that than he is for what he did, you know, in the NBA, you know. He said people see him like, wait, you're the crying face guy. Like, that's how they recognize him, you know, like the internet's a powerful thing, man.
Well, like somebody said, like, if they're getting beat up, they're knocking the guy out with like the phone.
The right,
holding it, like that's the guy they're going after.
Right. Yeah. You don't want the guy to capture it, but it's crazy, man. And it's funny too, because when you get knocked out, I don't know. I tried to explain to somebody fighting in the UFC one time. I was like, you don't understand what it's like. If someone beat you in a one-on-one in basketball, you can still go home and think, yeah, but if he'd have said something, I'd have beat his ass, you know? You can always feel like a man like that, or yeah, but if, you know, like, if it came to it, I could still whip his ass. But then, like, when you lose a fight, that person can beat you up. So if they break in your house and you don't have a gun, like, they will do whatever they want to your family and then beat you up in the process. You know, like, I used to think about that. Like, if Stefan Struve broke in my house and I didn't have some sort of weapon, he would be able to kidnap my family because, like, he actually beat me in a fight. And I did my absolute best that I prepared for it for months and still got beat up. You know what
he
I mean?
Also, so he also beat Stipe Miocic in a fight, who is considered the greatest heavyweight ever. All I keep thinking, though, is, like, Tyron Woodley, man. There's a guy who, like, because I was there. I saw the whole thing. I saw him when he was in Strikeforce. I saw him with the UFC. I saw him become the champion. And then I keep thinking of just him laying there after Jake Paul hit him.
Right.
And it's just like, man. And, like, I think he's such a strong human being for able to deal with that. Every time, every time he posts anything, some fucking asshole puts that little picture up.
Right.
No matter what he put. And I'm like, man, that's my biggest fear is that. That's probably my biggest fear my whole life is getting knocked out, especially for Tyron Woodley, who was, you know, a guy who beat Darren Till, a guy who beat Robbie Lawler. I mean, just.
They love rubbing it in because that's what you're best at. And they're like, look, the thing you're best at in the world, someone straight beat you up or did it, did you better. And per, or, you know what I mean? Like national TV, they saw it. That's what a, I wasn't a big Woodley fan until I saw he gave that money. I don't know him, but until I saw he gave that money to Stephen Bonner when his house burned down or whatever it was, man, because he didn't have to do that.
No.
And I doubt Woodley is, I mean, like every other UFC champ, they're not financially secure when they retired, no matter how many title fights they had. It's like they never made enough to.
Well, we're going to talk about all that. But yeah. Now, Woodley, I mean, that was super cool. And I hit him up and I was like, Tyron, Stefan's, you know, house burned down. Can you help out? Or, I mean, can you just spread the link is what I asked him.
Right.
And he was like, fuck that. He's like, this dude, I wouldn't be where I was if it wasn't for him. You know, and it gave him $4,000. And I was like, holy shit. Like, just, like, met Stefan like twice in his life.
Right. Yeah, that's why I told you about it. I'm sure Dana doesn't like me telling the story, but Bubba McDaniel's little two-year-old boy was murdered by some psychopath. And I hit Dana up. I never asked for a favor. I don't even like asking for tickets, man, because I saw an interview one time. He said his least favorite part of the job is people requesting tickets. And I never asked for tickets to another UFC event after that. I was like, I don't want to bother him. He's always been nice to me. You know, like, people hate Dana. He's always been really nice to me, man. And I mean, always in every situation, like, went out of his way to come talk to me, you know, before the fights and stuff. And but when I told him, I asked him if he could put the GoFundMe on his Instagram. I said, I'm not asking for money. I'm not anything. You just do that. He said, well, how much are you trying to raise? And I think it was 25 or 35,000. I want to say 35, but I'm not sure. He goes, I'll just have my secretary write you a check and I'll still share it anyway. He said, but who do you want it made out to? And I was like, well, not me. Cause I don't want, you know what I mean? Look like I had anything to do with this, you know, cause people kept thanking me, like people around Bubba thanking me. I said, dude, don't thank me. I did nothing other than start a GoFundMe and ask Dana to share it. I didn't dream. I thought he might give a little money to it, but I didn't dream he's going to write me a check for the full amount and say, the only thing I ask is that you don't talk about it on Adam's podcast. No, he didn't say that, but Dana was like, I don't really want, and not because he doesn't want to be bothered, but he doesn't want credit, you know, for doing stuff. He does stuff like that on a weekly basis, man. He helps people out like that, but you'll never know about, you know?
I got to say, Ali Abdulaziz did the same thing for, it was James Vick. His sister needed surgery and he just covered it. And then, when I thanked him, he told me to take it down.
Right.
I thanked him publicly, you know, it was pretty damn cool.
Brendan Schaub offered to pay for somebody's kid's surgery and then didn't do it, backed out and actually never gave him the money. And they asked the guy about it, said, Brendan said he was going to cover it. He goes, yeah, I mean, he just helped out by, you know, putting the word out there and, you know, like that was enough help for me. And I was like, dang, so that dude gave you nothing. But he actually said on Rogan's podcast, he would just cover the whole thing, you know, whatever. And then never gave him a dime. So
that's
a perfect job.
Come on, man. That just sucks.
He outdoes himself on a weekly basis. It's awesome.
I mean, that sucks on so many levels. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? All right. So
I meant to tell you real quick, not to interrupt you. I meant to tell you, I went out to eat with my son the other day. He's down at Indiana University living on campus and stuff. And I was always really leery about, you know, when I started doing interviews in the UFC, I never knew that like it would forever be on there. When I said I smothered my grandma with a pillow, I thought that was for Spanish TV. I didn't know it was going to be on YouTube, attached to my Facebook page, linked to my Twitter. I like it that everyone I know would see it within 24 hours. Like, or when I admitted to taking steroids before I fought Pujanowski, I didn't know they were going to put it in everyone. And it would always be there, you know, like, and I would trash my ex-wife and my kids like see it today still. Like it's still like 12 years later, the interview's still on there on YouTube. I didn't know back, that's back when YouTube was new, you know? Right. So all that to say, I told my son, I said, yeah, I do that. I was just talking about doing that podcast with Adam. And he said something that he knew way too much about something that happened on the podcast. I said, well, you don't like watch the podcast, do you? He goes, how mad would you be if I told you I've seen almost every episode since you started on there? I was like, dude, I said, I told you to never watch any podcast I do because there's stuff I don't, you know, people always ask me why I don't write a book. I'm like, because I have a mom and I have a soon-to-be wife, and I have a daughter, and I don't want them reading the stuff.
Yeah,
that,
right. Like, your mom follows me on Twitter. She's fucking crazier than you are.
My mom is awesome, man. She really is.
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like a fake account because it looks just like you with like longer hair and like a pretty version. I mean, obviously like an and a lot thinner. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, dude, your mom is like beyond Trump. Like she's just fucking cursing people out left and right, dude. Like when I'm like, where did Sean get his shit from? I'm like, just look at his mom. Like, holy shit.
Yeah. It's actually a good thing my dad's not alive today, but if unlike yours, but if my dad were alive today, man, he wouldn't have probably made it through the COVID thing or the Trump thing or the stuff. Like he got to a point where he couldn't take the stress anymore. That's what I'm trying not to do, man. I've never had anxiety my entire life. And my dad spent the last 15 years of his life constantly worried about his grandkids, constantly worried, hey, are the kids healthy? Like, don't go outside. There was a coyote that attacked somebody, you know, on the south side of Indianapolis or whatever, like just constantly worried. And I find myself as I do that, like waking up every morning, waiting to be able to read and thinking, man, I hope I don't have a text from my kids where something bad happened to them. You know what I mean? I like it started as I gotten older and I don't want to live my life like that, man, but it's, yeah, my dad wouldn't have made it, man. So he was a germ freak, like germaphobe too, man, about like he'd bleach. He would sit in a tub in a horse trough. My dad had a lot of money, not a lot of money, but I mean, they were well off. He made his own horse trough hot tub because he was too cheap to buy a hot tub. Took a big horse trough, put a dishwasher heat element in it, wired it himself, a little bubble machine maker, poured a gallon of bleach in it and sat in water because he thought it would heal a cyst that was on his leg or whatever. Ah! He would sit in it and I would come in the house and be like, Dad, you smell like bleach. What is going on? And like he would actually just sit in a tub full of half of bleach, half water, just sit there. And like he thought bleach would kill anything. Like it was like he was like just absolutely.
What ended up happening to him?
I don't know, but I'm sure it didn't help. He ended up having to have it cut out like the thing. But he would pour bleach in their well, you know, like in Indiana, sometimes houses still have well water, like even in the city. So you got a well. He read somewhere that pouring a half a cup of bleach once a year into your well would clean the bacteria out or whatever. So he began pouring a gallon of bleach every day into his well. And when you do it, you're supposed to run it all out. Like you're supposed to run the well and have it go through all the pipes and clean everything out. But he was so obsessed with being clean that he would do it. And I'd like take a shower at their house. I would stop by and it was like closer to where I was going than going back home. I was like, you guys take care if I take a shower, you know, because it was my childhood home. They'd be like, no, I'd go up there. All of a sudden my eyes would start burning. My skin would start burning. I'm like, why is it smell like a swimming pool in here, you know, or whatever. He thought because it said chlorine bleach that it was the same thing they put in pools. And I was like, Dad, that's not, he goes, no, it's just chlorine, just like in pools. I was like, no, it's not, Dad. It's chlorine is one of the ingredients in that bleach, but it's still bleach, you know, but he put bleach on dogs. He thought it would kill fleas. Like he was bleach obsessed, man. Like,
oh my God.
Would do it, like pour it to his hand and rub it on a dog. If it had fleas, where like, oh, this kills it. I was like, kill the dog too. If you want to kill the host, I guess you can kill the parasite. But he became obsessed with bleach and being clean. So I found myself obsessed with being clean too. Like I take 4 or 5 showers a day now, which you can do when you have way too much time on your hands when you're not arguing with someone on the internet. But
one of my siblings, I'm not gonna say which one, was on some heavy drugs and the cat was sick and she thought the cat wouldn't stop meowing. She started giving it Tylenol PM would like help her go to sleep.
Yeah.
The cat never woke up.
I was gonna say it went to sleep all right. Yeah.
That was dude. My dad told me because I had hemorrhoids a couple bunch of times. And I'm like, Dad, I have hemorrhoids. Like, oh, what you want to do is you want to put your ass under the faucet in the bathtub and put it on like scalding hot. I'm like, he's pretty
old. Feels amazing.
He's pretty my dad old. Had, he, yeah, go on.
My dad had me pour rubbing alcohol in my ear when I had a popped eardrum. I had a popped eardrum and he told me that all that fluid and blood was in there that that swimmer's ear, like that little mess in swimmer's ear, was just rubbing alcohol. That's all it was. So he said, if you put it in there, it'll clear it out, like how the swimmers do when they want their ears cleaned out. Like, turns out it's like 70% rubbing alcohol, but just a little droplet. So I had a like Tim Sylvia pop my eardrum when we were sparring, like just the air compression of a boxing glove hit my ear, and I didn't have headgear on, and popped it. So I have blood pouring out. I can't hear for days. But yeah, I went home. He said, oh yeah, I poured rubbing alcohol in my ear, dude. I have never to this day felt pain like that in my life. Like, it felt like my brain was burning.
Why would you listen to your dad about this?
I don't know. My dad, it's funny. My dad was the smartest, craziest person you've ever known. But he also, like, my older brother always made a joke. He said that my dad had one piece of genius advice every day that would change your life and make you a super successful man. The problem was he gave 30 to 40 pieces of advice every day. And you had to know which one was the good one, because he would tell you, he told me one time, like, for example, he told me, don't get married till you're 30. If you wait till you're 30, you can marry a girl 10 years younger than you. If you wait till you're 30, you can be a teenager till then. You don't need all the responsibility of a kid. Of course, I don't listen. I get married at 19. That all ended up great, you know, or whatever. Like, stress on my mind at 22 with a kid trying to, you know, build a business and stuff. So he told me that was great advice. I should have taken it. He told me, I mean, all kind of stuff. But then he also told me one time, he looked around and goes, listen, I need to talk to you about something. We're at a Cheesecake Factory. I was like, yeah. He goes, have you ever noticed that everything is shaped like a penis? And I was like, what do you mean, Dad? And he's like looking around, like no one's listening. He goes, listen, it's a conspiracy. And I was like, what? He goes, like, look, like a paper towel roll. Like, he points it out, like it's shaped like that. He goes, like that. He starts pointing out stuff. I said, you mean cylinders, Dad? Like, you're pointing out like cylinders, like that wine bottle. And he was like saying, like, it's, you know, like the bottom part of it's like balls and the part. And he was dead serious, like telling me this, everything was shaped like a penis. He goes, and I was like, well, what end, Dad? Like, what conspiracy do you think that they're, you know, doing or whatever? He goes, they're trying to turn everybody gay. Like, that's what they were trying to do for population control. And I was like, so here I am. I get married at 19 because I didn't listen to that advice. And instead I'm looking out for the penis conspiracy, seeing dicks everywhere I go. You know what I mean? Like looking around, like
super bad. That wasn't super bad. Remember the kid kept drawing dicks?
Oh, I don't remember. I saw it, but a long time ago. Yeah.
See where the kid, I think it was Jonas Hill, kept drawing dicks. Like everything he did, it was a dick.
Oh yeah. It was yeah. But yeah, my dad, he had me, I mean, I wasn't worried about it by that point, but he would, yeah. So he tells me, pour rubbing alcohol in my ear. Oh, it'll be fine. It'll clear right out, which it did. I could hear again, but it burned like hell, man. But he would always, he always had pouring bleach on stuff, just always something. But yeah, if I could have, like I said, he gave me some great advice, you know, but you never knew which one it was. So that was the problem.
We had similar situations. My dad, like when he was after he managed Alice Cooper, you know, he made all this money. Like, you know, they gave him this band that couldn't fill a fucking elevator to like, so all of a sudden these managers from England were giving him all this money. Like, and they gave him, I think it was a band called like, I don't know, like Blue Cherry or something. And he was picking up the guy from the record label. And he's like, and he was driving by the whiskey at like noon or something. So he knew the guy at the whiskey. So he paid the guy to put like Blue Cherry and then opening act like Jimi Hendrix on the marquee. So right. then he drove by that like at noon on the way to the airport to take the guy back to England. And the guy's like, oh, how's the band Blue Cherry? He goes, look. And then it said like Jimi Hendrix opening. The guy's like, they're at the whiskey tonight? Holy shit. The guy like signed a check on the spot. You know, back then there was no internet or, you know, like.
Right, right. Not to know, yeah. But how did your dad? I always wondered, how did your dad become a manager? Did he just know the guys from Alice Cooper, or what did he?
No, he moved to California. He was selling drugs, he was selling weed and all kinds of drugs.
We've all been there.
Him and his buddy named this guy Shep Gordon, and they his college roommate, and he was trying to pick up this girl, Cindy, at like a clothing store, and she's like, "Oh, what do you do?" And then she's like, "Oh, I'm here with my brother's a musician or something." And he's like, "Oh, really?" He's like, "I'm a manager." So he lied trying to pick the girl up. Right. And said he was like, "Oh, well, maybe he could manage my band." So then he said he became a manager like that, trying to pick up a girl, and then he managed the band.
And so he had no experience, no anything?
No experience at all.
That's awesome.
And then Alice Cooper was so bad, they couldn't get out anywhere. They were walking free concerts. And then one day they were playing like a farm, and there were all these chickens on the farm, and they started throwing the chickens out in the crowd. And my dad got a phone call from Frank Zappa. He got him on Frank Zappa's label. And Zappa was like, "Hey, I got all these calls from like all these animal rights activist people, what, you guys are killing chickens. And my dad's like, sorry, sorry. He's like, no, that's the only press you guys have gotten. You better keep that shit up. And then
holy shit.
Then they went like crazy with it. It was just one thing.
All from cruelty to animals. That's amazing. That's
dude, dude, one time they were staying at like the Waldorf Astoria, and like they had a huge snake, a huge boa, and they used to keep it in their bathtub on tour. And right. One time it got loose. And they just left because they were like not going to report to the, hey, by the way, there's a snake on the loose in your hotel. And right. They said like 3 weeks later, they're watching TV and Charlie Pride, who was like this like black country singer, was taking a shit and the snake came up.
Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Dude, that's insanity. It's I actually found a boa outside my house down here. I live in the country, but it was somebody released it, or a python. It's not like a native snake to here. Shot its head off, actually shot it with my Glock and actually hit it first time and shot its head completely off. And it was still trying to bite, even with its head off, like completely off, still trying to bite. But it was like an 8 foot long snake, man. I've got a video of it. But I asked a guy that grew up down here. He goes, dude, that's not a snake from down here. I don't know what that is, but somebody just let their pet go. But it was, my dogs were going crazy. And I went over, I was like, holy shit, that's a big ass snake, you know? Or whatever, when I saw it. And people do that shit. It's crazy, man. Like I know down in Florida, you know, with those hurricanes and stuff, man, then the alligators end up all kind of places, man. That's a,
oh yeah, dude, there was a, I remember watching this one show where like on Animal Channel, and the guy's like, hey, there's the alligator in my bathtub. And the guy looked like a 6 floor walk up. So they came, they're like, how'd you get it? He's like, I don't know. But like, like what a fucking asshole.
People are something else. Like it's, people really are too good to be true. It's awesome.
And then there was one, but my dad, you know, he was selling baseball cards. Like later on in life, we would do baseball card shows together, and he would run the shows, this and that. I remember he like had this grab bag, right? And like Brian Taylor was the big card. It was 100. It was a guy for the Yankees. He could pitch like 110. Ended up throwing out his, ended up getting into a bar fight, breaking his hand, and that was then. This guy was like the fucking, they were calling him the next Nolan Ryan.
That's a good idea when you can only do one thing in the world, like throw a ball fast, to use that arm to do dangerous things with. That seems like a good idea. That's your only ability. Like,
I actually hit him up because he was in jail afterwards. I wrote him on like Facebook or Instagram. I found him. And I said, hey, man, I'm a big fan. I hope you're doing well. He never got back to me.
But, sounds like you're doing great, but for everything you said. But I always loved your dad when I met him, man. He's a bright dude, man. Like that's what I can always tell, you know, geniuses recognize each other, but no, your dad, he got my jokes right away, which scared me a little bit for a guy that old to understand my sense of humor. Like he actually, cause you know, I always explain my jokes after, and he's like, no, I get it. Like he got it like right away.
He's right on it. Dude, one time, so we used to sell baseball cards and he used to have this grab bag and it was like $120 Brian Taylor. But he would never put it in the grab bag. Like, right. I was like 11, right? So he would like go through boxes and boxes and boxes. And then like one time someone like bought all the, and then he would ring a bell. And he would give out good cards, like $50 cards, $75 cards. But he would never give the card out. He would go, but eventually like people showed up and they were like, they were like, some guy bought all the cards. He's like, I'm buying the whole grab bag. And then he'd put it in his like sleeve. And then, you know, put it in there so he didn't get caught, you know, not having it. And so one time someone did get it when I was working it. And I gave the guy like a Ricky Henderson or something, right? And I was like, Dad, look, I saved this money. And he felt so guilty because he taught me how to steal. I like ripped
him.
So he never did it again after that, you know.
Dude. I had my son. I don't think I've ever told him about this. Good thing he'll listen to this later and tell it. But I made the mistake of letting him bet on the Super Bowl one time when he was 7 or 8 years old. And I started explaining to him how betting odds work just because you're sitting there talking. I'm like, oh no, you have to bet more. And he's like, oh, because they're less likely to win. Right. And so that's how they make money. I explained the whole thing to him. And then, long story short, I find a little notebook at my house. He's running a sports book at his Christian private school. Like he realized like he was like taking bets from people and acting like he was putting on a DraftKings, but he realized the house always wins. So he didn't have to, he said, I figured he'd just cover it out of his money. if he lost, but he said like all his friends are making bets and they're like, you got somebody to make bets for you on DraftKings? He's like, yeah, whatever you want. But he just took the bets himself, you know, or whatever. And so he had people betting 20 and 30 to one odds, you know, like 20 bucks on a 20 to one. And he goes, they're never going to win at 20 to one. It's never going to happen. And, but yeah, I was like, dude, you can't, you go to like a private Christian school, you're running a sports book. And I was sitting there thinking like, I was like the dad from the 80s commercial, like who finds drugs in the kid's room. Like who taught you how to do this? He's like, I learned it by watching you, you know, but here I was explaining to him how sports books work, why they all trying to explain to him the dangers of gambling. Like they always win. Mathematically, you cannot beat them. It doesn't matter how. And if you do beat them, they'll stop taking bets from you. Like, you know, like right. I found, man, one time I told him this story when he was a kid, too. And this probably wasn't any good. But when online gambling first started, they would give you a 10% bonus for whatever you deposited in your account. And then you had if you deposit $1,000, they would put $1,100 in your account. Once you've made $1,100 in bets, then you can take out any of their free money. Otherwise, you're limited only to your money that you've deposited, right? So simple scam. They're just trying to get you hooked on betting. So I put a $10,000 in on a card. Now I have $11,000. I immediately withdrew my $10,000 the next day. I have $1,000 of their money to bet with. So I use that $1,000 making 10 different $100 bets that are just like sure things. You know what I mean? That pay $100 pays $17 or pays $14 or whatever. And I would bet till I got up to $11,000 in bets, then I would withdraw a bunch of their money, right? Then I found out they're giving you a 15% bonus if you refer someone. So I refer my brother refers my ex-wife refers his wife, and I'm going around. So come to find out, we have like $20,000 or $30,000 in free betting money we're doing, and we're just smoking them, man. Because even when you lose, it's their money, you know what I mean? Yeah. So we're just going to account after account, using a new credit card, you know, under a new name, use one of my friends, you know, I put the money up doing this and that. Eventually they seized all the money. Like they took all the money in the account. They tried to seize my like $25,000 I put on a card and said that I was illegally beating their system. I was like, there's nothing illegal about it. Like, well, you're just mad that I beat you. Like the guy's emailing me. I said, his name was Jim Price. I'll never forget. It was something gaming or whatever. They were out of Costa Rica. I said, you're just mad that I beat you. That's what you're mad at. He started making threats. He goes, next time I'm not going to be so nice. I was like, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? You're in Costa Rica. And he said, I am, but my people aren't, you know, or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking probably to a mafia guy. Like that isn't named Jim Price, you know, or whatever. But, I had beaten them out of it. So I had to go to my bank and said, I didn't know what happened, but someone had charged $25,000 this is like back in 2002 before they like internet was brand new. Yeah. And so the day that they retracted the funds and gave me my money back. And I started getting more threatening emails from the guy saying that I owed him that money. And that was, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we had it for a while. I mean, I probably only made 10 to 15,000 on it before they caught us. You know what I mean? Because you had to make so many bets. But I realized like it was a no fail system. Like I was betting only with their money all the time and betting sure things and splitting it up. So it wasn't always like I didn't fall into the game. They thought they're going to get you addicted and you're going to start betting your money, I already have $1,000 of your money to bet with. I only got to make $11,000 in bets. Every two nights I'm betting $1,000. I'm betting three or four games at 300 apiece, you know, or whatever, always betting your money. And I lose every now and then, but when we get to 11,000, then I pull out a bunch of their money, you know? So, but yeah, I did that for a while. That was awesome. And I told my son about that. And so I think he tried to do it with DraftKings too, because I kept seeing on his bank account, I kept seeing weird deposits from like weird stuff, Venmo and this and that. And I was like, dude, if you are gambling, he's like, oh, dad, it's just one time. I was like, no more gambling. Like we're done, you know, or whatever. Like it, but it's my own fault. All that's to say, it was my own fault for teaching him the game, you know? So.
Well, when I was in high school, you know, I got sent to this boarding school where like, they basically brainwashed you, you know, they put me in with a bunch of like drug addicts, people that ruin their life with drugs, you know, people that beat their wife, beat their kid, just people with a lot of issues. So yeah. I was scared straight from all of it, you know, and then, I never wanted to touch a drug when I was in high school. And my dad was like, you know what? It doesn't bother me that you don't like drugs. It bothers me you don't like them, but you never tried them. Like,
that's awesome. He just wanted you to learn the hard way on your own. Learn the easy way.
Dude, we used to be like on like Cancun and I'd be sober for the wrestling and he'd be rubbing alcohol in my face. Like, come on, you fucking pussy. Like he was.
Well, maybe he knew he was a genius. He knew you were rebellious. So you're going to do the opposite of whatever he tells you to do. So you're like not drinking was your way of rebelling.
I told you he got kicked out of my little brother's little league because he figured out that if the team lost on purpose, they would play an easier team.
So right.
So he threw the game, played all four players. And then they thought he was gambling on the games. Dude, my dad was so funny. The stories he tells me sometimes, I'm just like, you know, especially with the Alice Cooper days. you know.
I can imagine. Yeah, that was one of my favorite movie moments of all time, man, in Wayne's World, where Alice Cooper, they're supposed to be wild and crazy. And they're like, you know, Milwaukee was originally named. They're like real smart, like talking about that was Alice Cooper, right, in Wayne's World?
Yeah. Well, he was thrown in jail, my dad, for selling acid and drugs with he said he was in the same jail as Sirhan. And
then, wait, who did Sirhan kill? Who did he kill? Somebody famous. Martin Luther King, is it?
No, JFK. I think it was not JFK. The other, it was it Bobby Kennedy or JFK's brother? And
I know Brendan Schaub thought JFK was also JFK Jr., that they were the same person. Like, he was like, yeah, it's weird. He got shot and then he died in a plane wreck. And it was like, wait, what? Like, what? Like, he got killed and then died in a plane wreck? Like, that Schaub.
But he, like, got out of it, though, by, like, they basically turned in like a field of marijuana. Like one time they just were driving and took a piss on the side of the road and it was like weed. And that's how right. They got out of it. They were like, oh, we know they're growing weed. All right. So let's talk about the fights, because people are either people tuned out or they love this podcast. All right. So Islam, I knew that was going to happen. I knew that this dude, everyone was saying, no, man, Oliveira. I go, he makes too many mistakes. This other guy makes none. He made one mistake, one fight 6 years ago. Like, well, like these, the, when you get these guys, like even Khabib, later on in Khabib, the Khabib that fought Gaethje, I think was almost beatable because he made a lot of mistakes. But there was a time where like four or five fights in a row where he made no mistakes. It was Khabib was fighting perfect fights, especially for that style. And I think Islam is, I don't think he's Khabib 2.0, but you have to fight a perfect fight to beat this guy. And And I also think Oliveira was like walking with tigers before the fight. The whole team was dyeing their hair. They had some kind of ritual praying around him to lose weight. It just seemed like he was maybe getting a little bit too.
That doesn't work, by the way. Praying to lose weight. That doesn't work for me.
What's up, people? Football is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You always find the latest football odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on your favorite sports and events. Bet Major League Baseball, MMA, tennis, boxing, even golf. Head to betonline.ag. to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. Bet online, where the game starts. What did you think of the Islam fight?
Dude, it went about how I expected. I luckily missed most of the cards, so I didn't pay for it, because the fights I was able to find a uploaded version somewhere online. Actually, my son sent me the link, so I taught him. Apparently, he's teaching me how to do bad things. But I was like, hey, if I went to watch the fight, how would I do it tonight? And he sent me a link, you know. And I was like, or today, I didn't realize it was during the day. I completely forgot. You even told me it was during the day because we talked about it. I completely forgot, but I watched it back. Yeah, they're just too good of wrestlers, man. Them dudes are just, and they're, like you said, disciplined. They're not going to get in a striking battle with you. They're not going to take anything risky to try to submit you if it's a, you know, bad move. They're going to just slowly grind away at you. They don't care if it's boring or not. And the UFC better be careful. They're going to have their whole company is going to be guys from Dagestan, man, if they keep bringing those guys over, because they are just, that's what they're doing from the day they're born, you know, like that's what they're doing. And it's they're going to take over. They're all going to fight just like Khabib, you know what I mean? Like, and the only way you're going to beat him is a wild punch, you know, like that's the only way.
I mean, from what I hear is if they show promise in high school, their high school is basically wrestling high school. It's like instead of gym, that's like learning. Like the one class is learning. Instead of gym.
Yeah. Recess is where they read. And then the rest is wrestling. Have you ever seen them play basketball? Dagestani basketball?
No.
Dude, you got to Google. That is amazing. It's basketball, but you're allowed to wrestle and there's no fouls. You can foul all you want. So a guy will be driving without dribbling, running, driving, and a dude will just jump up and take his back and choke him out while he's trying to score, and then someone else grabs the ball, and then that guy goes down and gets taken down, you know, from behind. He's on a leg lock, so he has to throw the ball away. And sometimes the wrestling match continues after the ball's gone. They still continue choking each other and, like, fighting. It's amazing. They've got a whole video with Khabib on there dominating in basketball, but it was mostly just with chokes and things like that. Like, he was arm-barring people at the free throw line. It was amazing. But, yeah, they're going to have a whole them guys, too, man, like you said, that on Oliveira – I don't know what gets – actually, I do know what gets in people's head. But when you get popularity, everybody starts treating it different. It gets weird, man. When the little bit of fame I had, which was minor, everyone around me, almost everybody started treating me different. It was so weird. Like, and if I hear the champ, I can only imagine, like, especially if you're from Brazil and you go there where everybody's, you know, poor or whatever, like, you know, wanting something. But yeah, that stuff when they all start doing that Hollywood shit, man, dying to the, or even like, you remember Anderson Silva started every fight, he had to start getting fancy and doing like dance moves and stuff like that. Like, it just goes to their head, and it's almost impossible to stay unless you're like that to begin with. Like John Jones, there's no telling how good he could have been if he was ever disciplined or ever really did. He just happens to be that much better than everybody, you know? So, I like,
mean, when you have three brothers and two are in the NFL,
right?
What is the arguably the best fighter of all time? That is beyond, I mean, you talk about blessed and gifted, not taken, and they worked hard. I'm not saying they didn't work hard. Obviously they work hard, but man, that's genetics that, like,
some of them don't though. I played basketball, I told you, against guys that played in the NBA in the future in college. And one of them had 42 points and 20 rebounds on me drunk. So drunk, he was having trouble running up down the court and was dunking on me and dominating me. Like, and I was good, man. Like, I was pretty good. Like, I was the best player on our team. And I was like, this dude is killing me. And he was so drunk, he had a pick in his hair, in his afro, for the first 3 minutes of the game. They didn't realize he had a pick stuck in his hair. And so he, like, caught a rebound and dunked it over me, and his pick fell out onto the ground, like, from his hair, from his afro. And I turned around, I was like, dude, does he have a pick in his hair? And the ref stopped and grabbed it, you know, or whatever. But yeah, drunk as kid, laughing, like, I'm next to him at the free throw line, we're getting ready to block out. I said, dude, are you drunk? He was like, he's like, dude, I'm tore up, you know, or whatever. And then he said not to mess with Eminem.
I have a friend who's a big basketball guy for ESPN now. He went to high school together. My friend Tim McMahon. He's huge in Dallas. And he was like, it was funny because, like, we went to my boarding school at the same time. And, like, the first day he was like, I was thinking Greyhound all last night. Like, we were going to run away together. But he was like one of the best kids in my college, in my high school, playing basketball. Big, tall, white dude from Texas. And he said that when he went to college, he was like D3. He said some guy dunked over him in practice. This, like, huge black dude dunked over him. And the coach yelled at him for almost hurting the black dude. Like, right. Like, and that's when he was like, I'm out of here. Like, this is like.
It. I think I may have told you a story. I can't remember, but I played against a guy all summer one time. And I was like, I'd given up my NBA dreams. I was only 18 at the time. But I was like, dude, if this dude can't play in the NBA, like, there's no way I'll ever play. And it turns out he did go on to play in the NBA, like, 7 or 8 years or whatever. And, like, I let it, he was like 22 or 21. I was only 18, but he was like 7 foot tall, a black dude, could jump through the roof, named Keon Clark. He was from the town I was playing basketball in, and all summer just dominated me. And I thought, dude, I'll never make it if this dude didn't make it. And then turn out he did make it. And, but yeah, it's a whole nother level at college, dude. The level from a major Division I player to even like the Division II or Division III, it'd blow your mind. And then the level for an NBA player from there is even more so. Look at that little girl.
My daughter's sick. She's been sick the last 2 days. So daddy, who missed his flight to Reno and had to drive there 9 hours.
Oh,
9 hours back. And then,
nice little drive.
And then I got, and then I got
in LA. It was probably only 20 minutes outside LA. You just had to do the eight and a half hour drive through LA.
Dude, nothing was worse than, like, I'm like, it's usually an hour from where I live to the airport. And then I'm like, I get in the Uber and it says I'm getting there like 20 minutes before. And of course I got this, like, female Uber driver from Russia who's hitting every single stop sign. Not stop sign, every light, worst way. Like, right. I'm like, oh, I'm not, I'm gonna just take me home.
Dude, I remember when when Dana did the Looking for a Fight show where they did stand-up comedy, you remember? Like, I was gonna have a chance to be backstage with David Spade and all these guys. Yeah. You and everything. And I literally was, my hotel was 3/4 mile from the place. So I thought, if I leave at half an hour early, that's enough time to go 3/4 mile to get there. I show up. It took me 45 minutes to go 3/4 mile in LA, literally just up a regular street, 45 minutes, no interstate, no anything. I get there. I remember it was awesome because I was following you trying to get to the backstage thing, and like, security stops me. I'm like, no, I'm with him. And you were like, busy. So I just kept walking. I was like, oh God. So then they want my ticket. And I was like, I don't have a ticket. You know, whatever. I said, I was here with, he goes, are you performing? I was like, no. And I was like, but I know those guys. He's like, yeah, everybody knows Dana, you know, whatever. So they make me, I said, dude, I'll pay for a ticket. Like, I'll just go out. So then I go out, pay for a ticket. Then there's a 2-drink minimum. So I'm like, how much do I, just tell me how much I owe you. I'll give it to you now. I don't want any food. I don't want any drink and anything. Just tell me. I end up giving them $60 or whatever. I sat by myself in the back room. And then you're like, texting me like, dude, where are you at? You know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just forgot. I didn't want to mess it up at that point because security already did that. But it's, and then when it was over, I'm trying to get to you. It's over. They're throwing everybody out of the club. I don't remember what place that was, but they were not friendly, man. I know you probably can't talk about it because you probably work for them, but they were not friendly to the customers. They were like, out, everybody out now. Like, sir, out. Like that.
It's,
like, right
as soon as the show went to new management. It's a different now. After the fight, Chimaev attacked one of what's the name's teammates, one of Islam's teammates. Did you see what right. happened?
I heard about it, but I saw just two dudes kind of shoving each other.
They started talking, and I don't know what was said. He like, and then the guy threw a punch, and then it was broken up. And then I guess the dictator from Chechnya squashed the beef.
Dude, but, that dude is no, you know, if it's a dude I think you're talking about, that dude is no joke, man. Like, that dude is not anybody to mess with. I bet he squashed it. He probably like told him, hey, unless you want your entire extended families being decapitated, you probably should act right, you know?
Okay, go out. Thank you. I love you.
That's when Conor McGregor was talking bad about that dude from Chechnya, that dictator dude or whatever. I was like, dude, that's like a mafia guy, but worldwide. Like, be careful with him.
Yeah, the guy throws the gay people off buildings and stuff.
Right, and they're not joking. Yeah, them Chechens are not joking around, man.
So they had a phone call with him FaceTiming the two guys, and these guys were all of a sudden best friends.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, they won't have another bad word to say about each other either, I bet. You know, like, it's crazy, man. Crazy.
And then, after that, Conor McGregor tweets out, right? Have you been following the whole Conor thing?
No, I just knew when I heard, actually, I saw Dana get uncomfortable. They said, is Conor going to have to wait 6 months to fight because he's not on the USADA thing? And Dana was like, yeah, that's he's going to have to wait 6 months.
He looked huge. I mean, he looks like the Liver King at this point.
Yeah. No, that's what, he's Roy. He's doing steroids, probably to help heal and stuff too, but that's why it's not because of the inconvenience of USADA's not going to be testing him 20 times when they know he can't fight for 6 months, you know, or whatever. But when he signs back up, if he's going to fight, they'll either, because you know, they did it with Lesnar. They just told Lesnar, oh, you only need 3 weeks clearance, you're fine. And that's when he tested positive against Mark Hunt for steroids, and Hunt went crazy saying everybody else has to be tested, but he can come in on 3 weeks notice, you know. But that's in their rules that they have the right with USADA, they can veto it or whatever, override it, and to give anybody the less time if they want. So I guarantee if Conor wants to fight in 2 months, they're going to find a way to be like, you know what? We test him. He's fine. He can come in and do whatever. So
after the fight, he tweets out, I have, and it's him versus Khabib when he was actually like the round that he kind of hurt Khabib or that he did well against in the third round. He goes, I have a system to hurt this style of fighting, guys. I'm telling you. Bro,
it works one out of every four times. Go ahead, sorry.
He goes, bro, is shit jocks. Fat mouth. Shut your mouth. You done nothing tonight except go against father's wishes and run. It's not father's plan completed yet, pal. You know, your people know, and they talk about you. And then he deleted that. So was that to Khabib or to Islam?
Probably, or maybe meant to be like, you know, mysterious, so they don't know who he's saying it to. If I was him, I wouldn't get too personal with any of them, man. You know, like, it's some people, man, I'm telling you, some people are not playing, you know what I mean? Like, they're not, it's not people. It's always amazing. I told you, I think about the time that I, if my son watches this, I didn't actually do this, but I followed a guy for flipping me off to his house. I don't know what he was thinking. I was pulled over on the side of a little like residential street, and he blows his horn wanting me to move. And I'm like, dude, there's other cars parked on. I'm pulled over, so I like wave him to go around me. He pulls up and flips me off and stands there and says something and pulls up. So I was like, oh, really? I was arguing with my girlfriend at the time. I was like, really? So I just follow him. It's not a quarter of a mile to his house. He pulls up, and I pull up, and I get out, and he gets out of his car, and I said, flip me off now. And he's like, what? Like, he, like, as if he had no memory of what happened 45 seconds ago. You know what I mean? He's like, what are you talking about? And his wife is standing there. I open hand smack him, like, smack the shit out of me, man. And all of a sudden he remembered and apologized. Like, he's like, dude, I'm sorry. I was like, dude, you don't know who you're flipping off like all the time. You know what I mean? Like, be careful with that. But it's you catch somebody on the wrong day, man. They're like, especially, I mean, you saw that guy. Did you see that video recently? The guy just started shooting. It was all over the news. This guy goes, is tailgating him. So he brake checks, and the guy goes around him and throws a bottle, like a plastic bottle, in his car. And the dude pulls out a Glock and just unloads on the car. And he's not in prison. Cain Velasquez is. He's not in jail, the guy that unloaded his gun on, because no one died. But it's anymore, man, especially nowadays. People are not joking. I know the Chechens aren't joking, man.
And then Conor writes, nice fight, nice performance. I have built all the tools to beat this style now versus before. Experience versus shit. Face breaking shots from the clinch and baby brain batter shots from the bottom. For the rest of my repertoire, you guys know, steel left leg, cannon backhand, wrist control. Why would he tell everyone what?
Right. Yeah. If that's he's like, I got a secret plan to beat you guys. Here it is. He's going to give you the whole.
Like, why would he tell you this? I don't know if this works or not. I have no idea. I mean, obviously Connor's a much better fighter than I'll ever even dream about doing or game planner, but I would think that the game plan wouldn't be to tell the person the game plan for 6 months before the fight. Like what?
I had a famous coach. I don't want to say who. I'll tell you off air or whatever. But I had a famous coach one time. I asked him for the game plan. He was known at the time for being a master game planner. So I'm getting ready to fight Struve, and I want to, like I said, hey, what's this guy's name plan for beating Struve, just out of curiosity? He goes, well, take him down, stay on top and either side control or half guard and hold him down and beat him up ground and pound, you know, but just try to stay in side control. I was like, well, obviously, like, that's like, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, that's like, what's the plan beating John Jones? Take him down, mount him, and just pound him out. And if he gets up, take him back down, take his back, like, you know what I mean? Or whatever. But I was so disappointed in the game plan because I was like, well, I thought I was going to get some kind of technical insight. Hey, he's bad about dropping his left hand or what is that? But it said, you know, this guy's supposed to be a genius at the time, but he's like, take him down, get in side control and stay there and beat him up from side control. I'm like, oh, it's okay. So that's all I got to do is just get side control.
The most honest guy you'll ever meet is Ben Asker. Cause one time, one of his guys that he was training or helping with, I go, how's he going to do? And he writes back, not good.
Right.
So Askren has been tweeting with Connor, bro, you aren't even USADA pool. You don't want to fight anyone. I retired 3 times and still have 4 times as many wins as you since 2017. As much as you are scared to admit it, you are done. Retire already. We know you don't want to fight. To stop calling people out, it's annoying. Connor just wants to skip the line and try to get a belt. Maybe you should get back in the USADA pool. I mean, Ben's not wrong on this.
Yeah. And I bet a meme is going to come back of him getting either hit with a flying knee or knocked out by Jake Paul. It's like, which Ben's got 2 famous ones like that, or, you know, one tops the other. It's who knows, man. But Connor, I don't know, man. I guess he just likes the attention probably, but it's hard if you've got a couple hundred million bucks, man. It's got to be hard to want to get punched anymore, even training, you know, like it's got to be hard to want to get hit anymore. That's what Robbie Lawler told me one time. He didn't spar anymore after his first, what, how many ever years? He goes, dude, I don't spar at all anymore. Like, you know, or whatever like that. And I was like, really? Cause everybody at MMA gyms, you're a pussy if you don't spar real hard, you know? And I never wanted to, man. I was worried about long-term damage. I was worried about getting my teeth knocked out, worried about getting popped eardrums and pouring a rubbing alcohol in my ear, you know? And heavyweight's different than if you're getting hit by 125 pound guys sparring, you know what I mean? Like, and I'd spar with heavyweight pros sometimes, you know? So I didn't like it, but Robbie Lawler said, I already know how to fight. I don't need to practice getting punched, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, well, I feel like he's been doing this. He was like 15 years old.
That's what he said. Well, he said he just sparred hard, like spars about 2 to 3 weeks before the fight. He got to do hard sparring, which is part of it. You know, he said, but this stuff, just going to get punched every day when you may not have a fight for 9 months to get head trauma is craziness, man. Like it's getting knocked out just for fun. It's I hate to see, I know guys that let their kids fight, man. They've got these fight leagues for kids now. It's the craziest thing, but I know guys that let their kids fight or their stepkids or whatever, and I'm like, are you really comfortable with him getting head trauma at 11 years old? You know what I mean? Like boxing and stuff in the boxing gym, sparring with people like kids 15 or 16, you know what I mean? Because he's a tough 11 year old. Like, I don't
go to an old boxing gym, right? Like, I used to go to Wild Card, and people, I bring people, and they were like, dude, is everyone here like off? Like, people's eyes are looking over here, they're drooling. Right. I mean, I remember this guy used to be I remember watching guys on TV, and they looked like they were like I hate to say it, like homeless. I mean, they were just,
right.
And you're like, man, it's hard to have somebody that, you know, I mean, look, you can get the Lennox Lewis's of the world and even the Roy Jones or, you know, the Antonio Tarvers but Bernard Hopkins. But then you get also the guys that just, you're just like, man, the Bobby Chacones of the world. You're just like,
ugh. What's crazy is the guys that weren't that bright to begin with. Like, you know, like I can never understand James Toney before he took head trauma, like, let alone like after 200 fights, you know, he can't, or like Brendan Schaub, like he wasn't, people, I says he has CTE. I'm like, he was an idiot before he ever fought or played football. Like, that dude was a retarded before any of that. But no, it's my dad was always worried about, cause believe it or not, I have a real high IQ and, you know, like I'm pretty bright. So my dad was always terrified. He goes, you're going to end up brain dead. God gave you a brain, you know, like you could do anything you want. You've ran a multi-million dollar business before. Why would you want to fight? You say all the time, like, why would anybody want to do that? And I used to tell him all the time, dad, but they're paying me $25,000, which means I don't have to do anything but work out for the next 3 months. You know what I mean? Or whatever. It's going to be $25,000 cash, like in Australia or Japan. You know what I mean? Or whatever. When I was fighting, they remind me of that story you told earlier. When I was fighting a Soa Pulele, this is when I'd already hurt my back. I mean, it wasn't as bad as it is, but it was getting there. It was pretty rough. And Monty Cox, my agent, calls me, said, hey, I have a fight. It's not a good matchup for you, but it's $25,000 and it's 4 round trip tickets to Australia. 2 weeks there, all paid for, you know, because they're doing media before and all this different stuff. And he lays it out for me. I said, who's the opponent? He said, so politely. I said, it seems like he's real tough, but I don't know if I've seen him fight. He goes, yeah, he's pretty tough. He said, I said, what is he? I was trying to look him up. He goes, well, imagine you, but just a lot better at everything. And I started laughing. I said, so he goes, like you, if you had good stand-up and really good wrestling and way better jiu-jitsu and like way stronger, you know, or whatever. He said, like, and I was like, oh, and so I said to Monty, I had like 7 or 8 weeks. I said, if I get in really good shape, like I didn't say take HGH, but I'm thinking if I take a bunch of HGH and work out for 2 months, getting diet real hard. I said, if I get in good shape like it was for UFC, what do you think my chances are on winning? He goes, not good. And I said, well, what if we push it back a little bit, tell him I can do it, but in, you know, 3 months, not 2 months. He goes, it's not going to make a difference. And he goes, he's going to beat you on your best day, on his worst day.
Oh, so, man, this is your promoter too.
Yeah, my agent. Yeah, he goes, I'm just being honest with you. He goes, because he told me one time it hurt my feelings. He told me one time after I beat Mark Hunt, I was going to fight Struve, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's a great matchup. And so after Struve, they want to put me with Christian Warcraft. And I was like, dude, I don't want to, like, give me somebody but besides him, man. I said, nobody knows who he is. He almost killed Struve when they fought. Like, he was murdering him until Struve.
He was a good underrated fighter.
Yeah, and I said, I don't want to fight somebody nobody knows who they are. And he said something at the time or whatever. He goes, well, I mean, I'm not going to put you in there with, like, Alistair Overeem and get you killed or something. You know, I said, because they're going to come back with a worse matchup. And I said, but you'll put me in with Mark Hunt. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Overeem, that's too much. But you're not going to get me killed by putting me with Mark Hunt at my first UFC fight. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Oh, and you have to cut 70 pounds in 7 weeks to make it. You know, like it. I said, you had no problem doing that to me. And he's like, well, you were taking a lot more serious back then. And I always was like, dude, it's not taking it serious. I'm injured. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a thing. But
I remember, like, you going, you were in the best shape of your life, you telling me, and then you go out and get killed. I go, what happened? He goes, I'm really good at lying.
Right. Yeah. No, dude, I they would ask me, they'd hit me up and be like, hey, are you in fight shape right now? I'd be like, yeah, a couple weeks I could be, you know what I mean, or whatever. I'm thinking, no way am I in fight. I'm worried I'm cutting weight for a fight that has no weight limit just so I look better with my shirt off up for the weigh-in. When I fought Pujanowski, I wasn't in bad shape the first time I fought Pujanowski, or the second time. Actually, the second time I went in bad shape. But standing next to him, everybody looks fat and out of shape. You know what I mean? Or whatever. No. Like, I asked him, I told his guy, his translator, I said, can you ask him not to take his shirt off, like, at the weigh-in? He's like, why? I said, because I don't want to stand next to him. If he keeps his on, I won't look dumb keeping mine on. And I was in decent shape. You know what I mean? Like, one like that. But this, standing next to him, you look terrible. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, but yeah, he pulls it off. And of course, every muscle is rippled all over him. You stand there, and I'm like, everybody looks out of shape compared to this monster, man. Like,
so Islam wants to fight Volkanovski. I never understood this calling out somebody lighter than you, even if they're the champion.
It's not a good look, I'll tell you that.
I can't get excited for it. A fight that you're supposed to win is hard for me to be like, oh, take my money. He's supposed to win that fight.
Dude, if Volkanovski beats him, it will just prove that the devil buys souls at a hefty price, because there is no way Volkanovski should even be able to hang with him. Like, it shouldn't even be close if they fight. You know what I mean? Or whatever. He's way too big, way too strong, way too good of a wrestler, will dominate Volkanovski at what he's best at. There's no – but if he beats him, Volkanovski sold his soul to the devil. I actually wondered that about – when Conor McGregor knocked out Jose Aldo in 7 seconds – yeah. I really said to somebody, I was like, dude, he might have made a deal with Satan, like, or whatever. Like, yeah, I'll tell you what I said. I've never seen anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, if he'd have beat Mayweather, I would have believed it. Like, if he'd have beat Mayweather, I'd have believed that he sold the devil. Cause it's like, it doesn't make any sense. I thought Volkanovski came in and called him out. So it was the other way around.
I'm sure it was like, I'm sure.
Yeah, they probably knew.
They had him there, you know? There's that. And now they're saying, Dana said that Colby and Chimaev is the next fight. For Colby, at least, I think that's a good fight for Colby. Call me crazy, but I think if Colby could just not get, if Chimaev gets a takedown, it's going to be a problem, right? But Colby's wrestling is really good. His stamina is really good. He doesn't have the greatest punching power, but I don't know. I feel like that's a winnable fight for Colby. And if he wins, forget about it, because
can you imagine? Yeah. Well, it's win-win really for Colby, if you think about it. If he beats him, because they've turned him into a god now. Chimaev is unbeatable, you know, or whatever. And Colby does have he's got good enough defensive wrestling. He can probably get back up even if he gets taken down. And he'll outlast him cardio-wise. There's not very many people in the world that will outlast Colby cardio-wise. Chimaev has shown he gets tired a little bit when the fight goes more than 5 seconds. So, I would say that Chimaev will be the favorite, but I actually would hope Colby would win. That would be awesome, man. That would be – if they – I don't know. It seems like if it's too good to be true, like I do almost feel like they won't do it. Like something will ruin it, like everything else. But ideally Colby would come in, and if Chimaev missed weight again, or he could take the fight and then have a built-in excuse going into it, and then it wouldn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, well, I'm fighting a guy 20 pounds heavier than me, you know, or whatever. Right. But
yeah, I don't even know that matters.
That'd be an amazing fight. That'd be so awesome.
The picture of Colby, he went to Candace Owens. Candace Owens has a documentary about how Black Lives Matter was a big fraud, the whole thing.
Right.
And that's her perspective, right? But on so at the screening, it was Colby, Kanye, Candace, and Ray J.
Right, all- naturally. Wait, is Ray J the one that was banging Kim Kardashian in that video?
Yeah, that's the
Okay, yeah.
I went to one of Ray J's concerts, like by accident. I went to go see.
I think that's everybody that was ever at a Ray J concert was by accident. I heard Jimi Hendrix was playing, like they were confused on what was exactly going on that night.
I went to go see Ashanti and Ja Rule, which is better, but at least like it was those. And Ray J was the opening act, right?
Right. Dude,
so Ray J the whole time he's very big. He's out of shape. He's selling a scooter. He has a scooter deal, right? About like where he's trying to sell those, like, you know, like those, not like a, those like mini scooter, the ones that you like stand on and like, you know, like those.
Oh, I think it's like a grocery store scooter. I was like, wait, he got so fat that he's selling handicapped scooters? That would
like a bird scooter, like a bird scooter, you know? Right.
I got you, yeah.
So he's selling so he has like six rap songs about the scooter.
he really sold out to that company. He must be an owner. He's got to have like his own money invested.
It was like he has his owner of this company. Not one person bought a scooter. Everyone was mad because no one knew the song about the scooter. And he's scooting around during the fucking song. It's like he's rapping on the scooter.
That's surprising to me because I know I read somewhere that most hit songs are inspired by scooters. Like that's usually the I don't know where I read that, but yeah, that most though, like Imagine by John Lennon originally was him about imagining him having a scooter. I think so. That's surprising.
You can't like Satisfaction was about a scooter.
It was right, yeah, not having-
it was. I was so annoyed because I had to hear all these like jingles about the scooter, and he had like backup dancers on the scooters, and they're all scooting around the stage.
Backup scooters on the scooter. They were scooting around backing him up. That's amazing. I went to Bobby Brown and Keith Sweat, and that's a long, crazy story where my ex-sister-in-law thought that she was going to switch brothers and like hook up with me or whatever. My brother couldn't take her to, and they had tickets. He was sick and was like, would you take her? And I was like, dude, she's always had a crush on me. I don't think it's a good idea. I get there and she starts thinking we're together, like trying to sit like right next to me and stuff. And I'm like, you're my brother's wife. Like, stop. Like, you're being weird. And then I ended up leaving her there. It was awesome. I just left her and told her to get an Uber, like left her at a concert with, she was probably one of three white people there. Once I left, I literally locked her out of my car and pulled away and just told her, text my brother, have you either come get her, get sent to Uber.
Gave her a scooter.
Crazy. But, get her. There's a scooter for rent somewhere, but she, it's funny. You're talking about them scooters. I think I'm still paying a monthly membership on a scooter for like Memphis, Tennessee, where me and my fiance were in there in town and they make you pay for a credit card for these little scooters. We were going, or no, it was Dallas, Texas. We go to see the JFK, you know, murder site or whatever, where his plane crashed. But no, we go to see, you know, Kashab thought that was in. But we go to see that. And I look at something the other day on my thing. I'm still being charged some kind of monthly membership fee, like $9.99, like $10 a month for some scooter thing. I'm thinking, wait, is that like, I look it up and I was like, is this either Ray J's new album streaming or I'm still being charged for that Dallas scooter from last year every month? Like it. Yeah. If I put my credit card in, I guess it's a scam. They somehow sign you up to a membership, you know, and you have to get online and cancel. And if you can't, if you don't know what scooter you rented, oh, we can't figure it out. You know, like it's always some kind of, like you have to research Ray J's lyrics, like it's a mystery to find out what scooter you had, you know, or whatever. Like it's a, they're like, play Ray J's song backward, it'll tell you how to cancel your membership. Like, you know.
All right, and finally, we got to talk about the O'Malley fight because, first of all, I had a parlay. I was so mad. I finally made a parlay where I would have won. I had Islam, I had Aljamain versus TJ. And then I had O'Malley. We'll talk about that fight also. And the O'Malley was like, it wasn't the worst robbery I've ever seen, which I think was Kevin Randleman and Boz Rutten. Yeah. You have to go back soon. Okay. I think that was the worst robbery I've ever seen. But I don't think he won this fight. I mean, you can't have like 6 minutes of ground control to 2 seconds.
Right. Six takedowns to zero.
I mean, like, and it wasn't like they were like, well, he landed the more significant. Not, I mean, maybe, yeah, but
that's what's so funny. According to who? Like, you don't know how hurt he was. He didn't, like, he wobbled him. I'm like, he didn't wobble him. He was backing up. Dude, people that think he won is awesome. Somebody put on Facebook real big, he, all capital letters, did it, and had a picture of Sean O'Malley. Yeah. And I put underneath, the judges did it, because that was the only, like, dude, that is, what rounds did he win? I know he didn't win round two in your mind. Like, yeah. I, for sure. He for damn sure didn't win round one. Like, you know what I mean? Whatever. Round three, if you want to call it 10-10, or you want to call round one 10-10, then you got to call round two 10-8. Yeah, you know what I mean? Right. If you're staying that or whatever. But everybody's saying he may have won round three. He didn't win round three either. He got taken down at the end of round three. Like, anyone that was watching that fight, a street fight between those two, would be like, Sean O'Malley got his ass kicked by that dude. It's not anyone. If you take it, you can take it minute by minute, round by round, or a whole fight. It doesn't matter how you compute it. He lost the fight and lost it significantly, you know, or whatever. Like, it was the only fight, I can't remember. I had it the other day. There was a Triple G boxing match that was rigged worse than that, where he won, like, the judges or the experts had him win in 11 rounds to one. And they scored it 10 to two for the other guy. And of course there was all kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it may have been him. And I may be getting that mixed up. There was a fight I may got mixed up. There was a Manny Pacquiao where I'd bet
Tim Bradley.
And
that fight was
it was like not even close. I remember I lost a fortune on it, like a couple grand or whatever. I was on part of a parlay, you know, or whatever. Like, I'd have made a fortune. But
there were some booking sites that didn't even give the money back. They were like, you know what? He didn't win. The booking sites refused to do it.
Right, dude. That's what it's. I always wished that it should be like that. Or when someone gets caught with like taking steroids or whatever, I'm like, okay, so since I got changed to a no contest, can I get my
100%
get my parlay money back? You know what I mean? Because that fight no longer counts as a win. You know what I mean? So anyone who thinks it's just like, the people who think that are the same people that are blaming Trump still for what Biden's doing now or whatever. Like, they're not, like, they are sticking to O'Malley is the man, you know, their fans, and they see it.
O'Malley did better than I thought he was going to do. O'Malley did great. He did great. Right. It was and I think that I was super impressed with O'Malley. They were saying he belongs here. But when someone's saying he belongs here, he belongs here, it doesn't mean he won the fight.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, judges were literally saying he proves he belongs. They wouldn't say he's winning. I mean, that, and because I got to go see my daughter, but TJ Dillashaw owes everyone an apology and their money back. You can't go into a fight with one shoulder where it blew out 20 times, where you can't hit mitts, and expect to beat the best guy in the world.
I wish we knew why I don't know. I don't know if it's a contract thing. Why he took the fight and did it and didn't pull out is beyond. Maybe he had sat out too long, maybe whatever. You know, I told you, I finally found the video. I'm trying to get it to work of the fight I fought with my shoulder out of socket that people never believe. I actually have the video now. If I can get the DVD to work, I found it in my pole barn the other day. The meth head was trying to steal it, but no, for TJ to fight, man, I was like watching that, and I felt like my balls were in my throat watching that, man. And if anybody knows what that feels like, it's Brendan Chubb. No, but I know how that feels when he would throw a punch and he would back up like his arm was hanging. I was like, oh my God, I was having like flashbacks, dude. Like, I was telling my girlfriend, do you realize how bad what he's doing right now hurts? Like, do you have any idea how bad that hurts?
One thing, you get hurt during a fight and you keep fighting, Ryan Faber, Jens Pulver, when he broke both his hands, he's just throwing elbows.
Right.
When you go into a fight with one arm, and that's why Aljamain looked fucking huge compared to him.
Right.
You've not only robbed the fans, you've robbed yourself, you've robbed the people, you robbed everyone paying $75. And
I want to know, does anyone around him care about him? That they would like, they should have said, dude, I'm not cornering you if you're going in with a dislocated. I had my very last fight I did. One of my guys said, dude, I don't even want to walk out there with you. Like, he saw me warming up. He said, you need to call it off. And I was the main event of this little show, you know, or whatever. He goes, dude, you can't even
walk from the car to the, we were going to a diner.
Right.
You walk from the car to the diner. And you were fighting that week. And I was like, bro, no, man. You're like, no, this guy sucks. I'm like, bro, you need a kick.
That one, Roy Jones Jr. himself had asked me to fight his promotion, and I was so starstruck. I was like, sure, like it was just anything, you know what I mean? And then he said, you can fight anybody you want. And it's a dude I beat at 30 seconds at at Bellator, I beat him literally in 30 seconds. And I was like, I'll fight that dude. He had a good record. Well, what I didn't know is that he was going to dedicate 18 weeks of his life to losing 90 pounds and coming in the best shape with abs. He was 290 pounds when I fought him. He came in with abs to fight me. And he beat a couple of good dudes after that. Like, he was actually fighting really well after that. But I didn't know, like, we came in, I was like, well, I'm glad you waited. Actually, at the weigh-in, I said to him,
You couldn't walk to the diner. And yeah. I literally bought you $700 worth of edibles that you paid for, but you didn't have a license.
Right.
Like, we went into a dispensary and you gave me like $700 cash to buy every edible in the dispensary. Right. This is like 2 days before the fight. And I was like,
they thought, that's what the funny is, they thought we were trying to like pull some. I said, listen, I don't have a license, but my friend does. I'm not from here. I just want something that kills pain. Cause I'd heard these stories about supposedly Cain Velasquez had some spray, CBD spray, put on your tongue and it kills all back pain. Stuff is the biggest lie ever, man. I saw Boss Rutten advertising one and I called him. I was like, Boss, sorry to bother you. Does that CBD stuff you're talking about really work, man? Because he said, I'm able to do this and this. He goes, oh, that's a commercial I did, man. I don't know. I don't take it. And I was like, awesome. Because I just, like, I thought my whole life changed. I was like, Boss Rutten is saying he can do everything he did before now with the CBD. Like, and CBD is the most overrated shit ever, dude. Oh, yeah. Like, it was a
crock. Anyway, I got to go watch the kid. Sean, you're the best.
All right, see you, buddy. It was good seeing Don and Greg today. So
yeah, of course. I'll see you soon, man. You're the best.
See you, man.